Welcome to Get in the Herd, a podcast about addiction and recovery brought to you by the McShin Foundation. If you or a loved one are looking for real discussions about addiction, recovery, stigma, advocacy, and most importantly, hope, then stick around. Thanks for joining us. Now sit back and get ready for another great episode of Get in the Herd.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the award-winning recovery podcast, Get in the Herd, brought to you by the McShin Foundation. I am Nathan Mitchell. I'm your host. And today we have in with us a volunteer, a facilitator, a group facilitator, a person in long-term recovery, and probably a bunch of other things. But the thing that I noticed the most about the person we have in with us today is that this guy's always on his bike. And just before the show, he was combing his hair, his beard hair, because he'd just been out on that. So, Steve, my friend, welcome to Get in the Herd. It's great to have you here. What's going on?
Life.
Life.
Yes. Dealing with life one day at a time.
One day at a time.
Yeah. Keeping myself active. My program in front of me.
Yeah.
We're looking for those newcomers.
Yeah. Well, so every week you come here to the McShin Foundation and you do a group. It's the 10:45 group on Tuesdays, correct?
Right. The people in the intense program are required to be there. And then there's other people that show up and we carry the message the best we can.
What do your groups usually do? What do you usually work with in your group?
So what I've found in my experience has been that my program, the way I carry the message, is usually based on who is in the meeting. Is it a detox meeting, a recovery meeting, or an open meeting where you have more people with experience? So this being an early first 30-day type meeting, like we do an introduction with a clean date, because a lot of people don't think about their clean date, but I kind of push that mode of what is your clean date. That is a special day. You need to remember that day. You need to save it, preserve it, and don't change it.
Yeah.
So we start with that, an introduction with your clean date and what may be on your mind today. Are you struggling with something? Is there a question? Bring it up, and then we do go around and everybody does that, and then I do the just for today reading. To give us something to kind of have as a topic as needed. But also I try to pick up on things people might have said and try to inspire them to work through it.
Yeah.
Give them some thoughts on it.
So your group is essentially sort of an introduction to Narcotics Anonymous. Is that fair?
Yes.
Yeah. And as an organization, you know, we support multiple pathways. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people in this building who do work a 12-step. Most people, I think, in this building work a 12-step program. And many, if not most, certainly work Narcotics Anonymous.
Right. Yeah. And when I came around originally here and asked if they needed a volunteer, if there was someplace I could be useful, they said they needed somebody to cover the 10:45 Tuesday morning NA meeting. And I asked, okay, so how do you want me to do it? And they said, however you want to do it. And they gave me free rein. And I'm old school, you know, NA kind of hardcore recovery. I don't sugarcoat much.
Yeah.
And I will kind of call people on their BS a little bit, but in a way that's inspirational, not demeaning, which is something that takes a little practice. Because, you know, you can get, some people don't take things as, you know, different people take things different ways. So I try to get the brains working in a manner, you know, where they understand me and what I'm trying to do. Because the whole thought process is, you're in your first 28 days here. This is when you need to get those basic foundation mode actions started. If you don't get your spiritual connection, if you don't start doing your literature, if you don't build a network and try to find a sponsor and get that going, the odds aren't too good that you're going to do it after that first 28 days. So the building blocks, and we're like, as I said this morning in the meeting, you can't put the roof on if you haven't had a foundation to build walls to put a roof on. And, you know, so that meeting is really about the beginning of the journey.
Yeah.
And trying to start some new habits. Starting new habits. There's, you know, some people that come into recovery never had the structured home life. You know, mom, dad, dinner at six. You know, we're all going to do this on Sunday. You know, all the bills are paid and they got transportation, whatever. You know, some people never had that kind of structure in their life ever. So now we're trying to get them to have structure, which is fundamental to recovery. So just trying to help people understand the need to get on a routine of positivity. I'm huge on positivity.
We were talking before the broadcast here, and we were talking about recovery time, clean date. You know, I like, what'd you say? January 6th, 2014. Yeah. What was that? A little over 8 years at this point.
Yeah.
Wow. They are slamming the door out there, aren't they?
Inconsiderate.
Anyway, if you're listening or watching out there, there's some stuff going on in the background here. It's life on life's terms mean that sometimes we hear weird things in the background of the show. These mics are sensitive.
Yeah, we need to get one of those red recording light bulbs.
I agree with you, but that's just another thing to get ignored.
Exactly.
I think we need to just actually surround the room with foam and soundproof it, but
soundproof
egg curtains
and curtains,
yeah.
Curtains, soundproof. You know, boy, that, ooh, I just had an isolation fantasy there.
Yeah.
But
start the dungeon.
So
another show.
It's a very different show, but you know, going into you've been in recovery now for 8 years, and so, you know, what is your journey? You know, tell us, you know, what was life like before you got into recovery? You know, essentially what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now for you.
My story goes back to, you know, a decent childhood with a working father and mom, three kids very early, and it was kind of tough. I was the only son and first child, and my father did not know how to raise children. He came from a poor family, and I took a lot of abuse. It was mental, physical. My sisters also took the mental aspect mostly. And I never thought of it as anything, but it instilled fear. And as I became an early teen, I found the way to get past my fears was to, I had to get a network per se of my peers. And the easiest way to fit in was alcohol, marijuana. And that was the early days. That's where it started, you know, 12, 13 years old when we could get our hands on it. And just going from there and carried on through my life, you know, with each year, it seemed like there was more and more and more. I worked a lot, you know, I had fun a lot, but drugs were a central part of everything I did.
Yeah.
And eventually, at age 49, I met my match. I picked up heroin.
Wow.
I had an old lady who was a heroin addict, and I forced her hand because I wanted to try it.
Yeah.
And against her will very much, I forced her hand, and it was on. As with any other drug I did, if I liked it, I went after it wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
And it took 5 years, and it whipped my ass. Literally, in 5 years, I did not want to live anymore.
Wow.
I actually addressed that to my family in a manner that was totally awful. That I told them I was done living. And I asked them, should I just disappear? It was cold. You know, it was a cold message. Very hard. You know, it hurt them. Their response was, would you try to do something? Would you try to get help? I'd never thought about it that way. I'd never looked at it that way. Get help?
Yeah, I didn't need help. No, you just needed to deal with me.
Yeah. Me was definitely the problem. It certainly wasn't a good time anymore, like it started out. So, you know, I made the effort, and I found my way into a program in Fairfax County called A New Beginning. And they recommended a 90-day in-house program, which I did. I was there 114 days. And I'm telling you, it saved my life.
So you kind of did your recovery at the beginning, just like you did your addiction. They said 90, you did 114?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And it took every day.
Yeah.
You know, it was hard. I was not easy to get along with for a long time. I didn't fit.
How did you not fit?
It was a community. It was a community of other people just like me, except, well, females, males, all ages, all different drugs. I never even knew about doing. What's Adderall? What does Adderall do? You know, I was basic, I felt like. But I knew I was sick.
Yeah.
Right? I knew I was sick. And their program was well designed, and it pulled so much out of me. It let me get rid of so much baggage. I mean, God, I felt like I wrote books in there. And the meetings that came in and the counselors, every little aspect of it made a difference. But I had to be all in. And the one thing I knew was if I wasn't all in, I was going to end up out before I was ready. And then I'd be right back where I was.
Well, how long did it take you to feel a part of instead of identifying it? Well, what I'm hearing from your story is that when you initially got to treatment, those 90 days, initially you were identifying out, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you talked about Adderall, my little brain got all fired up, and I said, I can tell you about Adderall because that's my story.
Yeah, I wouldn't know until somebody, I didn't know until, you know, even in the last few years, someone responded with they had relapsed on something they got at the vape shop or 7-Eleven or something
like CBD
Kratom.
Oh, Kratom. Yeah.
And I'm like, what the hell is Kratom?
Yeah.
You know, I've never heard of such a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but that's, you know, when we were talking about the heroin that whipped my ass, you know, I only overdosed one time and it didn't even slow me down.
Yeah.
But I was able to maintain some kind of a respect or a decent way of living through that somehow.
Yeah.
I wasn't robbing and stealing. I felt like I wasn't hurting my family. I was just doing my thing as we will. But in the end, I figured it out how much damage I was doing. Even though I kept myself away, I was doing a lot of damage. It was bad.
We talked about those yets before the meeting earlier, because you know, with my part of the story there, and certainly the robbing and the stealing and all that, mm-hmm. you know, it's a lot of people's story.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. There's certain things, you know, my experiences were broad, but when I look back at the miracles of my story, that I survived, first of all, the many years of drunk driving as a youngster.
Yeah.
And reckless drunk driving. I mean, crazy, reckless drunk driving, irresponsible as I could be. Surviving that, never hurting anybody, killing anybody along the way. Never having done time.
Hmm.
Never, I mean, I was behind bars maybe 5 or 6 times in my life for a few hours. Never spent 24 hours. It wasn't because I had some big lawyers or something. I never got any major charges. And my consequence level was low.
Mm.
I always worked hard and had the money to do what I wanted to do. And, of course, that was what I like to do, you know. And it was, I mean, I raised a couple of daughters. I had a wonderful, I had a marriage and a couple of daughters. I ruined the marriage. And that kind of really unleashed the beast again. It was tame for a while, but in the end, finding that program and being able to put all that behind me, starting, you know, having the NA group feeling, that's what really let me invest in the reality of I can do this, was going the NA way.
Yeah.
And although I was always a believer that a meeting is a meeting. It doesn't matter what meeting it is. If, even if you're going to church, it's a meeting of good souls.
Yeah.
Of people who want to live. And so that's what I did. And that's what I've done.
Well, it's about community, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Humanity. I'll take it level up. Yeah, level up. I think that's one of the things that I find. I spoke about it this morning. One of the main things missing in society, not even just in the world of addiction, humanity. Mm. Where's the humanity?
What does humanity mean to you?
We're all the same people. Everybody, we should all have our souls and our hearts in the same manner.
Okay.
Right? I don't have any reason not to be as kind to one person as I am to another. There's no difference.
Yeah.
And the fact that we can agree to disagree, but we can also do for each other and have a better world.
Okay. I like that.
You know, crossing different lines and borders of, you know, whether it's addiction or not, whether it's racism or religion, you know, it doesn't matter. We're all human beings.
Well, you talk about that 114 days. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? What did you do after the 114 days? Where did you go?
Straight to an Oxford house.
Straight to an Oxford house? Okay.
Yep. Straight to an Oxford house. May 1st, 2014, I left and went to an Oxford house in Fairfax. I stayed there a few months. Interesting experiences, but you know, it was all right. It was part of the growth, part of the learning. You know, I experienced roommates who chose to go back out,
yeah,
and had to maintain my resistance to do the same thing. I pretty much lost all my cravings while I was in the rehab.
Yeah,
I didn't have cravings, and I knew if I were to use again, I'd probably be a dead man pretty quick. I mean, reality was death was imminent.
Yeah,
to me.
How did you? So one of the things I struggle with in recovery and building my community is because the rate of recurrence of use, the rate of relapse is so high,
mm-hmm.
and you know I'm building my community, and you know I'm putting my faith well. This is the wrong word. I'm putting my faith into a power greater than myself.
Absolutely.
And sometimes, I guess, for me, a power greater than myself. Maybe I'm answering my own question here. Let me get to the bottom of this question. So, you know, one of the problems I have is that, you know, building my community, building the people that I have around me all the time, is not everybody people, I don't know how to ask what I'm trying to ask. The rate of recurrence of use, the rate of relapse is so high,
right.
And I'm building community.
Right.
And at the same time, like, I'm struggling to keep my, you know, to just get by one day at a time. And then, you know, the person maybe living in the same house or in the same room,
sure,
has a recurrence of use. Or in the case of, you know, some people, you walk in, somebody's, you know, hitting a pipe right in front of you.
Right.
You know, how do we deal with that?
In the real experience that I had, it was more often alcohol.
Yeah.
And I would go into my room, which was a shared room, and actually find the open liquor bottle.
Yeah.
You know, and I was experiencing these relapses. When I was in the rehab, and, you know, everybody being on their own schedule, but depending on when they came in, they were leaving on different schedules. And I would see people when we would have our graduation for somebody, and I'd say, he's got it. She's going to kill it.
Yeah.
These people have accomplished this. They've got it. And attached to the rehab center is the detox center, which we're not really supposed to know anything about who's over there, but we could see a little something through the kitchen when we worked in there sometimes. And I was seeing those same people that I believed had it.
Coming
back. They
were
going to do good. They were back in detox.
Yeah.
So the relapse rate then was like 12, 1 in 12 would make it through that first year, 2 years.
Yeah.
And it got so bad that I remember staff coming to us and talking about, you need to take this more serious as a group. And there was after you graduate out, you have the opportunity to come back for another 26 weeks once a week. A group of people that got about the same time within 3 or 4 weeks till they have a full group. And every Wednesday evening we would meet. That core group of about a dozen people that I was in on the graduate class, all but one of us, as far as I know, are still clean.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. After what they had gone through. But we witnessed that, and I think we learned from it. And
all but one.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was amazing. Now, some of them I haven't been in touch with in some time, but it stayed strong, real strong. I struggle with here when I do the meeting that I do, seeing people relapse so much. It does have an effect on me emotionally.
Yeah.
Right. I don't worry so much about me going back out, but I do struggle with the numbers have changed so much. They've almost doubled since I was in
yeah.
rehab. Almost doubled. And I walk into any meeting. I walk into any meeting and I'll tell everybody about, I'll talk of the number and I'll say, by the way, I don't know what you're going to do, but I'm the one.
Okay.
I'm the one.
Okay.
And then I will explain that if everybody in the meeting doesn't have that feeling,
yeah,
doesn't feel the same way about themselves, then they're probably not the one.
Okay. Okay. I like
conviction.
Yeah.
Absolute conviction. Creating that absolute conviction.
Well, how does that relate? So you and I, we both work programs that are really defined as a one day at a time or just for today program. And of course, one of the things I love about this program, you know, 12 steps for me, is that I can restart my day
absolutely.
At any time. You know, that's
absolutely.
I love that.
Yes.
Yeah. So that conviction, I'm the one, and that one day at a time, to me, now see, this is my naive little person. Maybe I need to think about this. But how do we put that together? How do we put that together in a way that recognizes, or maybe how do I put it together? Because I'd like to have that conviction.
Mine just comes from the absolute fact that I believe if I were to ever use again, it would be the end of me almost immediately.
Yeah.
Some of that is, there's a negative in that. But getting clean when I did, I was 55 years old when I got clean.
Yeah.
Right. So, and I didn't want to live anymore. I was set. I was done. And did not want to live anymore. I mean, I survived through Christmas, barely to, you know, trying to get into a bed that was available. I struggled for months to get a bed in the rehab.
Wow.
It took a lot just to get in. And just the feeling that at any given time while I was in there that I could be thrown out or I could walk out of the door anytime I wanted to. And I remember the director one day, I was only a couple weeks in, did 10 days in detox, then went over for a couple weeks, and my mind wasn't there yet. I was still talking in a foolish way. I was still expressing, like when we were out smoking, I was talking to some people. I said, you know, I'm going to give this a try for a little bit, but really I think I'm going to end up right back where I was, and I'm going to take myself out. A word got back to staff, and the director, an old biker named Dave, happened to catch me. I think I was set up. I was sent to the med room to get my meds. And Dave was sitting there, and Dave didn't even look at me. He was just sitting there. And I remember he didn't, he just, I hear you've been talking out the side of your neck. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I, yes, sir. That changed everything. That simple moment of somebody giving me a good, honest word of what I needed to hear.
Yeah.
And he reminded me then, I've got a list of people that want your bed.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people waiting for that bed. And if you don't want this, get out of my building.
Yeah.
He was cold. He was right.
Yeah.
And he was honest. And it worked for me. Not saying it would work for everybody. Mm. You know, it was a struggle.
Yeah.
That being in there with all those different age groups and what I considered a bunch of disrespectful females that, you know, I felt like I was so much older than most of them, and I didn't
act
that way. And, and well, the fact is I had done just as much or worse in my day, you know. Here again, I hadn't gotten past being judgmental and opinionated to the degree that it was not healthy. I've always struggled with that.
Being opinionated?
Sure. I still do. I still do.
How about the judgmental part?
I've gotten much better about that. I mean, I catch myself and I remind myself and I try to balance that, you know, be respectful.
Yeah.
It's not my place to judge. It isn't. Now, I can have an opinion without judging, right?
All right.
I think that when you act that way, you are putting yourself in a negative light. You are reducing your opportunity. You're not being respectful to yourself or to somebody else. So that's an opinion.
Okay, quick. Can I reducing your opportunity? I'm taking that. Art, you're going to hear me use that.
That's a good one. I like that.
Reducing. I do too. I like that. Yeah, I like that, I mean, a lot.
You control your destiny to a degree.
Yeah.
So your actions, your thoughts, your words, and your decisions.
I like, man, I love that. I, you know, one thing as a recovery coach here, as a peer recovery specialist and working with the individuals I work with, right? We talk a lot about goals, you know, and putting goals and especially when there's a transition from the intensive house into, you know, step up house, you know, we put it to paper, you know,
right.
And then often I'll have conversations a couple weeks later and, you know, I'll be hearing these wild things coming out of a coachee's mouth and said, and my standard response to that is, how does that fit with your recovery goals?
Mm-hmm.
You know? To the point, actually, Joey, who was in here earlier, he kind of laughs when I say that. But it's one of those, for me, it's helpful when people say that to me. How does that fit with your goals, period, recovery goals? All goals are recovery goals in my my day now. And it's helpful to be reminded of that.
Reminder.
Yeah.
Yeah, that reminder.
Because I struggle with judgment. And I struggle with my opinions, too. And I struggle with earlier today. I struggle with the minor inconveniences, the frustrations that come up, and the trying to fix, manage, and control everything around me.
Absolutely.
And I'm so,
I can make this happen. And, I can make it work.
And if only this happens, then I'll be happy. Or if just all it takes is this, and ooh.
Yeah, it's a challenge to that, your acceptance.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Expectations.
Yeah.
Expectations. You know, I've learned, although it's always a struggle, I can't have expectations on people who come in here to try to find their way. For whatever reason they come in, you know, when I do my meeting, I expect that you're going to get something out of it. But I've had to tune back those expectations to all I can do is deliver the message.
Yeah.
Maybe grab a little piece of the heart or the mind. Because I can get, I do have a tendency to get passionate. Because I am, I believe that. I believe it's necessary.
Yeah.
I have expressed the fact that the rehab I went through, that everything you wrote, basically, and we had to do a ton of writing, you had to read to the community. You had to share it with the community in front of them and read it out loud. And I was, I found out I was a pretty darn good writer. I could take what was in my heart and put it on paper. And then when I read it, there were times when I broke down because it was very emotional. And I had other people listening break down.
Yeah.
So when you feel that, when you see that, that's an accomplishment. It's like a cleansing. And to follow it up with, then you get feedback. Yeah. And then you have to not have that feeling of, well, who are you to say that to me? Right? Because they're going to give me their feedback, their opinion of what I wrote and read.
Yeah.
And so it was training. I mean, it was that was training. That was learning how to be open-minded and not judgmental and to listen to other people and what they think, whether it really is. When you go to I'll go this way. When you go to a meeting and people take turns sharing, what percentage of what is said do you really need to keep? I've been to a lot of meetings where there was more cackling than there was recovery.
Hmm.
Cackle, cackle, cackle.
Yeah.
And it was irrelevant. Now, it's good to share, but make it relevant.
Yeah.
Be relevant. And the young people in recovery, listen to people who have the message of recovery, not the ones who talk about all their daily problems. Listen to that recovery message. Because you'll hear it, and you will come to feel it if you're open-minded enough, and you feel it. What's the worst part about getting clean? We come out from the shadows, and our numbness is gone, and we get our feelings back.
Right, right.
And I've used that. That's a two-sided coin. It's wonderful getting your feelings and your emotions back, but damn, it hurts.
Yeah.
It will hurt you to the core. When I came out of rehab, I was an emotional wreck. I couldn't watch TV. Johnny's dog would run across the road and never be found again, and I'd be in tears. You know, I couldn't handle emotional stuff well at all.
Yeah.
And it took a while. 30 days after I got out, my little brother, roommate, 20-year-old Brian, was on his way out, and another fellow decided to go out and use and then come back to the center, and they were immediately noticed. The one fellow ran. Brian was put next door in detox. He became belligerent the next day. His dad came and got him and took him to his Oxford house that he'd already been accepted into. Spent the day with him. Went home. 8 hours later, Brian was dead.
Yeah.
There's a 20-year-old young man that I remember sitting he was on the next bed over from me one night, and he asked me, Steve, how do you know when you're done? I'm 55 years old, talking to a 20-year-old who's overdosed 10 times more than I ever did.
Yeah.
And has had a horrible youth. He experienced some very bad things. And he asked me that question. How do you answer that? That it was tough. And then to lose him like that, because he chose to use. We don't know if he didn't want to live and it was suicide, or if it was just an accident. Mm-hmm. Nobody will ever know. His father and I are still friends today, but that was the hardest funeral I've ever done in my life. And I've been at many funerals.
Yeah. How did you answer him? How do you know when you're done?
I tried to express to him that it was a personal level answer.
Yeah.
So my answer wouldn't be the same as his. That all I could do is kind of explain to him why I was there and, you know, what it meant to me, what recovery meant to me, and how absolute I had to be about it.
Yeah.
And that I knew what would happen if I went back out. For him as a young man, it was just the only thing I expressed to people, and even in my program, I don't think about it as I'll never use drugs again. I'm for the rest of my life. I just do what I do and don't use drugs.
Yeah.
I don't think about the future of not using, you know. It was tough. That was the toughest funeral I've ever been to. So many people in recovery came, and his father had a setup of a service that was just unbelievable, the way he did things. The rejoicing, freeing ourselves. He did put your note in the open casket, and it'll go of something that's troubling you, and it'll go away.
Yeah.
The going away was carrying the casket to the inferno in the back.
Yeah.
And then everybody was outside, a beautiful day like today, and we all had balloons to write on. And he said, this is freedom. Release things from you and let them go.
Yeah.
You know, his father is very inspirational. Now he's probably close to 40 years sober through Salvation Army was his pathway. Wow. So the open pathway, I've come to understand more and more, especially having just trained with the peer recovery specialist training, all the open pathways, different ways to find what works for you. It won't be the same for all of us.
Yeah. And there's even, you know, I was talking to another participant earlier who works 12-step, you know, NA, and you know, we were talking about, I don't want to go down the road of controversy here.
Right.
But what does it mean to be clean in NA essentially? Mm-hmm. And, you know, talking about Vivitrol and Suboxone and all these things.
Yeah.
And I, you know, he was asking my opinion of this, and I said, well, my only opinion is that anybody who has an opinion on that, who's not a doctor, is an asshole. That was my, and I say that advisedly. Because I'm stirring up controversy. Because what works for me is not going to work for you. You know.
Look, and that's just it. Geez, I could get really controversial about this. I got to be careful where I go. And it's here again. First of all, it's not my judgment. I was on Subutex for the 10 days I was in detox, and 2 weeks after when I was in rehab. For pain.
Yeah.
And the doctor, you know, that was his decision what we should do. After the 2 weeks, I told him, Doc, this stuff's not working. Oh, I knew it wouldn't. We needed to raise your dose.
Mm.
But I felt the cloudiness. I was in a fog on a simple 8 milligrams.
Mm.
It's one thing to wean yourself off of your drug of choice or whatever when you come into recovery. I'm not a big fan of it beyond that. I haven't experienced it. I knew that if I were to leave there, whether forced to or chose to, I'd get sick.
Yeah.
You will go through sickness. I've helped people detox off of methadone. I've helped people detox off of heroin. It was easier to get people off of heroin.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Some people are told you may need to be on this for life.
Yeah.
I don't know how far I want to go with this.
Well,
it really does get controversial from there. Yeah. But as far as look, if you're being a productive member of society, if you're being part of your family, if you're paying your bills on time, if you're going to work, and okay, so if a doctor's recommending you do this to be able to do all those things, and you do all those things responsibly,
yeah,
who's to say? Everybody's different in every manner.
Yeah,
you know, not only do we all look different, act different, but we're all chemically different. So I can speak from my experience. What do you want out of life?
Yeah.
What are you willing to do to get it? To have it, I should say. And who benefits the most from it?
Yeah.
How does it affect your siblings, your children, your parents? Yeah. Let the fear of what, and this goes back into more into the relapse side. I share, let the fear of what you have left to lose keep you from going back out and changing your clean date. Imagine your parents or your siblings at your funeral. Close your eyes and think about it. Imagine.
Yeah, that's part of that no sugarcoating it thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
Put the fear in there. I mean, it's, you have to have some fear. You have to have some reality.
Well, and if we're going to have fear, why not have these fears? You know, because the fears that get me are, you know, stupid. I say stupid fears, but the fear, like the fear of success or even the fear of failure, you know, which is just like, you know, it's like, okay, paralyzes me and I don't want to try anything, you know, but the fear of going out and going back to that. I'm not as see, I told you with the camp, with the lights, I'm not really as articulate as I'd like to be, but that gift of desperation, right? You know, I was told early on that, you know, cause I walked into those rooms and I'm like, oh, this God thing. And people gave me some helpful tools to come to that. And now I have a very rich and deep understanding that works for me right now. And I think I have an open mind. It's certainly a willingness that, you know, this understanding is increasing as I grow. Right. And I'm so grateful for that. I'm really grateful to have been able to be continuing to make a constant contact with a power greater than myself. But with that early on, it was really important for me to get out of myself and learn. And that gift of desperation, people say group of drunks or group of drug addicts, you know, as an acronym for God, gift of desperation really still does really worked for me early on. And going along with what you said is that, I mean, I remember that just being so done that I just didn't want to exist. And I was too chicken shit to just pull the trigger or kill myself, you know, being so done that I just couldn't reach out to my family, who's, I have very loving and supportive family, you know, who aren't, I joke about my mom being an enabling. She wasn't, you know, she did sometimes, but I think she grew to be more enabling because I don't know. That's another story.
You became a better manipulator.
I did. You know what? I did.
I recognize that. A better manipulator.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah.
We do perfect certain skills in active addiction.
You know, I found the guilt triggers and I just kept going with them. And
how far can you stretch the truth? How far can you carry something before you've really crossed a line?
And I just don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and so that gift of desperation for me is looking at that and saying, no, I don't want to be that. And if I do this, which are the drugs and the alcohol, there's a really good chance, very good chance. There's not even a chance that I'm gonna be that. And I just don't want to. I just have too much love in my heart for the people around me, you know, who have supported me for a long time. And I would love to say that I'm going to do that for the rest of my life, but I get up and make a choice.
Right.
You know, resentments get to me, you know, anger
sure.
gets to me, sarcasm, all the little annoyances of life.
Much, right.
No, it doesn't.
Right.
That's, and it scares me, man. It's so, it's why I got to have people, you know, like Art in my corner who calms me down a lot. You know,
right.
people in my corner be like, yo, blah, blah, blah. It's like, Nathan, how does this fit with your recovery goals?
Right.
Gosh darn it. You'd use my own darn words mm-hmm. with me, you know?
What do you help? What do you accomplish when you let negativity in or let somebody else affect your feelings? What do you accomplish by allowing
I give up
others to affect you? I've yeah. tried to, you know, before in active addiction, my life was so up and down, flat, up, down, flat. You know, it was so unpredictable and so crazy. And now it's very active, very busy, but I do it in a low key way. I try to, you know, I have a little, try to keep it like a little calm ocean. Mm. I try not to let people get me bent out of shape.
Yeah.
You know, I take the reality of what effect does it really have to have on me? What's going on around me? So finding out. I had wonderful news. I can't even get into it right now. I shouldn't have started this. On Saturday, I got some wonderful news.
Yeah.
About Christmas already. And then from there, this morning, getting a call that a good friend of mine from grade school had passed, and he never got clean.
Yeah.
And, you know, the I don't know that I really let either one of them escalate or deflate me enough to notice.
Yeah.
I'm kind of an even keel, take it as it comes and process it, deal with it, and keep moving forward. Go back to the change I must or die I will aspect of this.
Wait, say that again.
Change I must or die I will.
Change I must or die I will.
Okay. So in the beginning of recovery, the changes were large.
Yeah,
large changes, not only quitting using drugs, but changing, which I questioned tremendously in rehab. Why do I have to change everything? I'm not a bad person. I've got a good heart. But the more I've been in recovery, especially after the first couple of years of being clean and being in recovery and not acting in the best interest of society in some ways.
Hmm.
Or in my own world, I continued to do certain things that were truly not proper to be in a program. I didn't use.
Right.
But I was doing other things that you could call them ethically wrong. You could call them morally wrong. Absolutely.
You just weren't living clean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I was going to meetings. Yeah. I had sponsors, and that's plural, which I figured that one out. But anyway, the change, we didn't, as it says in our readings, we don't become addicts overnight or all at once. It's done over a period of time. My period of time was over 40 years.
Yeah.
Over 40 years. And so, it took a while, but you know what I find now, the change is still there. I'm still changing, but it's much finer tuned now.
Yeah.
Right. So once I quit doing this and quit doing that and started acting this way and that way, was able to become more and more honest, more and more willing. And you get to where you're fine tuning your brain.
Mm.
The change really becomes so internal. My mindset.
Yeah.
How do I look at a beautiful woman with a certain attire in public? You know, and I've struggled with that, as my wife reminds me. You know, she doesn't laugh. No. Oh my God. And she's
Is
right.
she in recovery?
And she no.
Ooh.
I believe everybody should be in recovery.
Well, I
believe everybody in the world could use a 12-step program.
Amen to that.
Because, you know, it's not, you know, because there's good things in the 12-step program about life. But you know, when the trick now is, wow, that's beautiful. Some lucky man's wife, some child's mother, somebody's daughter, and keep my thoughts simple and clean like that.
Yeah.
I can't help with my eye sees, but I can have a respectful thought about it.
Yeah.
That's a lot of change.
That's growth.
That's a lot of change.
I have a friend of mine also in the fellowship. She talked about, okay, that's a thought. And she talked of it as a leaf falling on a running stream. And approaching it, I think, from a very Zen place, I guess. But I like that. I go back to that visual.
Sure.
And I can hear her telling that. It's like, that's a thought. Okay. I don't have to do anything with that thought.
That's right.
You know?
That's right.
Can't control the thought.
What you hear and what you see, you can't control.
Yeah.
If it's there, it's there. That'll take me to something I like for early recovery for people. Putting pen to paper. You mentioned that earlier about the goals.
Yeah, yeah.
Early recovery, if you can get in the habit of putting pen to paper, it makes it real. I can have a conversation all day long. But if I write it down, it becomes real.
Yeah.
When I was first in detox, they gave me a pamphlet to fill out so they could do a evaluation of me.
Yeah.
To think about where I should go from there. I was brutally honest. And it took a while. And the more I wrote in that pamphlet, the more I wrote on it, the more it affected me. And we're talking about I was 3 or 4 days into detox. But I was thorough and honest with it. And then I had to go in a room and explain it to a young lady who I didn't know, who was college educated, was not a, you know, she was not an addict.
Yeah.
And I broke down. Because she's asking me questions about what I wrote. And the more what I put on paper, where I put pen to paper, was coming back at me real. It was real. And she's asking me to explain and elaborate. I had to leave the room 3 times in an hour because I couldn't speak. I couldn't catch my breath. I couldn't stop crying.
Yeah.
If you can't have that kind of an emotion in your detox, early rehab, if you can't bring up emotions like that, maybe you need to try a little harder.
Yeah.
Because if all you do is occupy space and go to meetings, you might not be the one.
Yeah.
Right? I just, from my experience, I believe that there's a cleansing, there's a change that has to come from within where you truly, what do they call that moment of clarity? But it's more of a, it's almost, there's a word for it in spiritual thinking, but
an awakening.
There you go.
Oh yeah.
That awakening.
There
absolutely.
He is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Where, you know, when you get to that point where you have put yourself out there to that point where it comes back to you.
Yeah.
In a real way that goes straight through your heart.
Yeah.
So once you get your heart in the game and you get your brain to start following a willingness, it's simple.
Yeah.
My life is as much as I've got going on, and I've got a tremendous platter of things going on in my life. I can't even keep up. But I can do it calm and I can do it positive. And I can have faith that all I have to do is maintain certain things to let it keep happening.
Okay.
To let it keep happening.
Yeah.
I finished my Uber work Sunday morning at 6 a.m. At 6:15, I was on the bike. We went and did an honor guard. I came home and mowed the yard, and I keep flowing.
Yeah.
And I keep that positive thought. And when negativity tries to come in, I try to find a way to either turn it positive or leave it, let it go.
That's good.
Right? Because negativity will only get breed and become more intense. So I don't have time for drama. I don't have time for negativity. I've got to keep my simple, old school mentality.
Yeah.
You know, all this new wave stuff, all this changing of the guard everywhere, all these complicated phones and computers. And hey, here I am sitting in a podcast. You know, and there's people out there saying, is that really Steve?
Well, you know, Steve, you know, we got a couple more minutes, but I do want to, I'll piggyback off what you just said. This sort of, it began right before COVID started, but it was perfect timing because, you know, we really didn't know what was going to happen with this it's just a platform, just another platform to put out every once in a while, you know, do a thing. And when COVID hit, you know, out of necessity, you know, was born this project that we were able to continue, you know, to put out that message and grab people from all kinds of people. I've been through this show,
right.
You know, and been able to talk, and, you know, from literally somebody walking in the door hasn't even signed papers yet. You know, I'm like, mm-hmm. Hey, you're right. Just getting back. And somebody I knew, but right. You know, you're just getting back to recovery. You haven't even detoxed, you know, come on, let's go. Let's
right.
talk.
Right.
To
real. It's real.
Yeah.
It's real.
And been able to keep getting that message out. And I think it's important that the open-mindedness, the willingness, the honesty comes in and we get to do these things. And I really love the balance of, you know, keeping it real, not sugarcoating shit.
Right.
Cause I know me, I tend to be a sugarcoater. And then what happens is, you know, Art will ask me a question and my first response is, ah, this, and I start to blame and say the F word. And I just kind of look at him. And what I love about this guy, I keep talking about you like you're not even here, but what I love about Art, you know, or people here in this building, not just Art, but people in general, when I start to do that, I immediately start to see myself in the facial reaction. I'm like,
right.
I don't want to be that guy. You know, that anger, that resentment, and that nastiness. It's like, you know what? I really, I get to see myself through other people today. I get to actually see myself through other right. people and not just look through people or look at, you know, this is what I'm giving you and that's it. And that rawness, that putting it, you know, there's a realness to me. I don't know what the hell I'm saying, Steve. You know, I think, Steve, that I love that we have these opportunities to have these conversations all day long with all different people who approach recovery in different ways, who are living, you know, acceptable, responsible, productive members of society, who right. you know, of society, which
starting
I
starting to enjoy life again.
Starting to
have
enjoy
fun
life. Yeah.
And
I freaking get clean to be miserable, man.
Right.
You know, I didn't get.
I didn't get clean to go to meetings either.
Yeah, right.
But everybody needs what everybody needs.
Yeah.
You figure it out as you go.
Yeah.
If this isn't working for you, be open-minded and kind of wander. Just stay on a path that's recovery and find what works for you.
Yeah.
You know? I remember the first time I went into the healing place, I walked in, took off my leathers and hung them on the chair, and I just looked up and said, I'm Steve, and you're all going to effing die. And they all looked at me like, huh?
Ooh.
But then I spent the next hour relating to that.
Yeah.
We're all going to die.
We're all going to die.
Inevitable. We're all
right.
going to die.
Yeah, yeah.
But I got your attention. Now, while we're on the subject, let's talk about how we're going to die.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Right?
Yeah.
I want to die with people saying, that dude helped a lot of people on the way out.
I like that.
He carried the message. He got his feelings back.
Yeah.
I got to make a call the other day, and I got feelings of emotion just from a conversation with somebody that remembered me from a meeting, and it overwhelmed me. It almost brought tears to my eyes.
Mm.
I didn't even know who I was talking to.
Yeah.
But the things he said, he remembered for me.
Yeah.
We do make a difference.
Yeah. And we don't always know where and when.
That's
and,
right.
And that's okay.
It is.
That's okay. My grandmother, who's going to be 97 in July.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh. She's amazing. And
she opinionated.
She is.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's very opinionated. But she's also... Oh, it's another story for another time because we're short on time. But I want to... The one thing she shared with me, not this past... I just saw her last weekend. A couple months ago, she shared with me... Her name is Margaret, Marge. And okay. She's like, you know, do I want to be the person that when I walk by, people say, there goes that Marge? Or do I want to be the person that when I walk by, people say, there goes that Marge?
Right.
And you hear the difference in that. And she is... always the I'm sure somebody doesn't like her somewhere. She's not a people pleaser,
right?
Yeah, but she's the person I'm like, I want to be near this person. She's got something figured out, and she's working with love, she's working with compassion and kindness, and she's not diminishing herself to do that,
right?
And I think that's a lesson for me. It is a lesson for me. I don't think it is. It is a lesson for me.
When you can do it without being just a people pleaser.
Yes.
When you can do it from the heart and be real and let it happen.
And boundaries.
That's right.
Mm. Are you one? I like that. Yeah. Are you the one?
Are you the one? If you don't believe you're the one, maybe you need to rethink your thinking.
Steve, do you have any last thoughts before we close out?
If you're on the road to recovery, stay there. Yeah. Hang around with people that have been around and have faith.
Appreciate
that. I believe in it.
I like that. Yeah. Art. My friend, thank you very much. I apologize for not seeing the message you put up there earlier.
Uh-oh.
Well, I forgot to put a commercial break in.
Uh-oh.
That's all right.
No, that's
all right. Well, no,
it was a good show.
Yeah.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for your service, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We will see. Thank you, Art. Thanks for everything you do. We will see you all Thursday. What do we got Thursday? Is there anything up there? Oh, I know we got a show. No, maybe we don't. It's not written up there? Well, it's all right. We'll figure it out, Art. Hey, listen, tune in. We'll have a surprise for you on Thursday at 2 o'clock. hey, we're struggling to get organized every year, but if we ever do, there's probably a problem. So listen, love y'all. Thank you for being here today with us and for joining us. Stay in the herd.
Honesty Liller. I am the CEO of the McShen Foundation and a woman in long-term recovery. Since May 27, 2007, I have not used drugs or alcohol. Woo-hoo! Thank you so much to the Richmond Times-Dispatch and all of our voters for Get in the Herd podcast. Those podcasts are amazing. Not only has it helped thousands upon thousands of people in their recovery, as well as family members, but it has helped me in my personal recovery. I get to listen to them now in my car through Spotify and iHeartRadio. And it's just really, really important for us to be innovative in the addiction field and the recovery community. So when COVID hit, we had to be innovative. You know, we really had to think of like, what can we do to reach people that cannot go to 12-step meetings, smart recovery, faith-based, whatever, that we're shutting down constantly. So we were innovative here at McShen. Let's start podcast. So with Todd, John, Alex, and some other staff, you know, we all just kind of jumped in who can do what. And with Todd's lead and John's lead, the podcasts have been amazing and we're still doing them today. So I want to thank you for all of your votes and all of your energy and all of your support of our mission of healing families and saving lives. Thanks.